migrant crisis. Well, we've been reading, I've been telling you about this for 4 or 5 years. It hasn't gone away. Views from Central Europe, and I quote, "We are not going to take part in the madness of the Brussels elite." That's the Prime Minister of Poland. So you have a lot of countries on the eastern side of the EU that are opposed to this immigration that's being forced upon them by what she calls, not me, the Brussels elite. They have told these countries, and there's seven of them. If you want to read the article, you can. I'm not going to tell you who they are, but it's Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, most of the eastern, what we call the Eastern Bloc countries. One is they don't have the money or resources. The immigrants are going to countries that will take care of them: France, Germany, Scandinavia, and Britain. Britain no longer has to do it because they kind of exited the EU. They don't have to follow that guideline as far as immigration. So we have these countries that are finally waking up maybe to national sovereignty, their own borders again. It's amazing to me when you go back and look at the EU charter, all this was supposed to be back then was a trading thing for the economy. And people could go between the countries freely because you could ride bikes and go through 3 or 4 countries at one time. It has expanded into this, so you have upset countries. Don't know what's going to happen. Those countries saying, you know what, you can fine us, you can do whatever you want. We're not taking in the immigrants. Not going to do it. So that's just a little bit of that right there. The other part was, Gatestone has an article about big businesses colludes with Islamic food. The challah and all that stuff is just a business thing. Nestle's has gone together with them to do this. So capitalism works, and no matter what kind of society you're in, be it communism for all these businesses to go into, it works in a sense that it knows no political boundary, negative or positive. That's what I mean by that. So even in Islam, they accept capitalism for their quote-unquote food, how you eat or how they're supposed to eat. Yes, I see all hand. The money. Come on, people. We do the same thing here in a sense. It's health food / and I'm going to say this real carefully, organic food. So we got to buy organic, and organic costs 5 times as much as the other one, but yet they have sold that to where we're going to do that. No different with them. So when you read the article that was done by a person in the UK, it's all about money for the Arabs and for the company. Okay? I'll leave it at that. Ezekiel. We're going to go to Ezekiel. I'm not going to talk about food. Yes?
What was the name of that article, the first one you were talking about?
It's called Gatestone Institute. If you Google Gatestone Institute, they will send you multiple things all the time. It is not a religious organization, even though they are very pro-Israel in what they write.
What's the name of the article?
The name of the article. Now I got to go back again. Mercy. Name of the article is Migrant Crisis, Views from Central Europe. Europe's Migrant Crisis, Views from Central Europe. It was put out July 2nd, so it came out this morning, by Soren Kern. So he's a pretty good writer. Yeah, he's really good. So if you want to read one, it's a long article, please read it. Okay, Ezekiel chapter 1, 22 through 25. As we continue to move through this book, and he says, "And over the head of the living creature there was the likeness of a firmament, like the terrible crystal to look upon, stretched forth over their heads above. And under the firmament were their wings straight, the one toward the other. Every one had two which covered on this side, and every one had two which covered on that side of their bodies. We should have that down by now. If I were to give you a pop quiz on how many wings the cherubim have, you should know that because he's probably emphasized that 4 or 5 times in chapter 1 already. So it must be for a reason he keeps driving home that point. And when they went, I heard the noise of their wings like the noise of great waters, like the voice of the Almighty, a noise of tumult like the noise of a host. When they stood, they let down their wings, and there was a voice above the firmament that was over their heads. When they stood, they let down their wings. Okay? So what is Ezekiel seeing? Ezekiel sees the wheels below the four living creatures. Now he directs attention to something he sees above them. Okay? Remember in his vision so far, it's been the four cherubim and the four wheels. And the wheels have a wheel within the wheel at right angles. So it doesn't have to turn. It can move any direction. The cherubim have how many faces? Four faces. They don't turn either. They don't have to turn. Okay, so they're there. He sees them. Now he sees something above them, and he's describing to you what he's seeing above them. So the first part of it is the appearance in 22 through 23. So what does he see that these angels or these cherubim, what's above them? In verse 22 again, and over the head of the living creature. Now, someone's going to say, well, living creature, what happened to the other three? Okay, we'll discuss that. It says living creature. There was the likeness of a firmament, like terrible crystal to look upon, stretched forth over their heads above. Okay? He didn't go from four to one cherubim. In this verse, he uses a singular term, living creature, because the four living creatures being joined at the wings now comprise a single unit. Remember, they always work in unison. We've seen that so far in this chapter. Now he sees them as one single unit, four but one, working as one. That's what he's kind of describing to us. He says, above the living creature was the likeness of a firmament. Hebrew word for this is raka, which means a hammered out piece of metal work. Okay? R-A-K-I-A, which means a hammered out piece of metal work. So the angels are standing in a single line. That's the picture he's telling you, with their wingtips touching each other. How big they are, remember, he doesn't describe that. But now he's describing that they're holding up this firmament, whatever it is. Okay, and they use the Hebrew word there, raka, if I'm pronouncing that right, which I'm probably not. It's the same word used in Genesis 1. Okay, it does not refer to heaven itself, but to an expanse resembling heaven. Okay? Expanse resembling heaven. These things, the cherubim and the wheels, came down and touched the earth. Now they're out straight for how far they go, who knows, and they're holding up whatever this is, this canopy, I'll call it for right now. That's what they're holding up. And above that canopy, we'll find out who's there. But they're not, he's not in heaven per se. He's seeing this right here. Okay? The four wheels are below the living creatures, but over the cherubim is the rakai, this expanse that serves as a platform over the living creature. So it's a platform over the living creatures. Okay? That's what he's seeing in the vision. And remember the purpose of the vision. God is getting ready to call Ezekiel, so he's showing him, and this is my interpretation, God's glory. God is who he says he is. And God will do whatever he wants to do, and he's going to use Ezekiel, but Ezekiel has to see all this to understand all this, and that's what God is doing this for. It says the appearance of this platform is like the terrible crystal to look upon. In the NASB, I know it says awesome. But see, we always think of awesome as being something positive. Okay? Terrible implies it is so huge that he's scared of it. Ezekiel's afraid of it. I like that interpretation better, because you got God up here and you got this huge thing and he's terrified. It's terrible to look upon. And maybe awesome is okay, but I'd rather use the word terrible there, because it is a terrible crystal to look upon. He's scared. Okay? Put yourself in Ezekiel's shoes. He's seeing things that you and I have never seen. And if you were seeing the same thing, how would you respond to what he is seeing? Okay? How would you respond to that? You go, oh, wow, that's fantastic. Now he's scared. Through the scriptures here, we find out that he's terrified. We'll get to some other this, a little bit of this a little later on. The Hebrew word for crystal means ice. Okay, so the Hebrew word for crystal means ice. So this firmament resembled a large sheet of ice, which was terrible to look upon. It was a large sheet of ice that they were holding up, so to speak. Okay, so it's the same word used in Genesis 1, but it doesn't refer to heaven itself, but an expanse resembling heaven. The four wheels and the four creatures are below the canopy or the sheet of ice, okay? And it's terrible to look upon. Another means he's afraid, okay? Okay, so likeness, that's why he's not in heaven. It looks like that, okay? That's where you get, because I know some people will say, well, he was in heaven. No, it was a likeness of. That's what he's seeing. The Hebrew word for terrible is often used to describe something of a divine nature or a celestial nature. Okay, so that's how they use that word. We use it differently. It's used that way here to describe something of a divine nature or a celestial nature. Okay. In Judges 13:6, if we go to Judges 13:6, then the woman came and told her husband, saying, "A man of God came unto me, and his countenance was like the countenance of the angel of God, very terrible." Okay, so it's that same thing here. So it's they use it to be that. Not that the creature looked terrible. She was terrified. Okay, that's in the ASV. I'm reading from the ASV. The NASB may have a whole different word there. What's yours say?
Awesome.
Huh? Awesome. See, but... in our language today, awesome means what? It's a positive thing. She wasn't positive here. Okay? She was scared of the being. Okay?
I would think it awesome in a way that it's just so incredibly beautiful and indescribable.
That terrible. That's that positive thing again, see? No, it just means it means reverence to it. It means what it says. It's a divine nature or a celestial nature. Okay, that's the best way to define that. Job 37:22. Job, turn to the book of Job 37. Job 37:22. out of the north cometh golden splendor. God hath appointed him terrible majesty. Okay? God hath appointed him terrible majesty. Divine nature. It's the easiest way to think of it. Don't think of it as being terrible and ugly. It's just divine nature. That's the best way to handle that, I think. Verse 23. And under the firmament were their wings straight, the one toward the other. Every one had two, which covered on this side, and every one had two, which covered on that side, their bodies. Okay, that's verse 23. This verse is describing the relationship between the wings of the living creatures and the firmament. It was like a long, straight line. And they're holding something that looks like a sheet of ice. Okay, something that he can't find the words to describe it, but he describes it that way. Okay? Their position was under it. They were not top of it. They were under it. The upper wings were stretched out horizontally so that they appear to support this platform or canopy facing each other. They could face each other, right? Because they've got four faces. So they can face each other. If you're here for the first time, you're thinking, what in the world are they talking about four faces? But most of you have been here before. The ones coming in for the worship service, this is all going to be new to them because they haven't been to Sunday school. They're going to have to go back in and repeat some of this so they kind of get the drift of what we've been studying and get them kind of caught up. So they were stretched out horizontally, supporting this canopy, and they were facing each other because of the four faces. They could, as you line them up, they could do that. Here we go again. These living creatures had four wings. The lower wings were used to cover their bodies as a sign of humility. So even as they're supporting this cat, they're still covering their bodies for a sign of humility. Okay? It's action. Ezekiel 24 through 25. So it's action. And when they went, I heard the noise of their wings like the noise of great waters, like the voice of the Almighty, a noise of tumult like the noise of a host. When they stood, they let down their wings. Okay? So now Ezekiel begins to hear noises, specifically the noise of their wings. So as you can see, Ezekiel's being very detailed in what he's telling us through this whole chapter so far. Very detailed information. And I think he's doing it because, again, they're not aliens, and the wheels weren't UFOs. Even though we have a lot of people out there who teach just the opposite, that they're aliens and they're UFOs. And he's been pretty specific all the way through this, telling you what they are and what they are not. He describes it in three different ways. First, like the noise of a great water. Basically, like a torrent or river in full flood or a waterfall. So it's pretty loud. Okay? Pretty loud. Secondly, it was like the voice of the Almighty, meaning the voice or the sound of rolling thunder, as in Exodus 19. So let's turn to Exodus 19. It says, in the third month after the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, that same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai. And when they were departed from Rephidim and were come to the wilderness of Sinai, they encamped in the wilderness, and there Israel encamped before the mount. And Moses went up unto God, and Jehovah called unto him out of the mountain, saying, Thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now, therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then you shall be mine own possession from among all peoples. For all the earth is mine, and ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. Then he goes on to say, and Moses came and called for the elders of the people and set before them all these words which Jehovah commanded him. And all the people answered together and said, all that Jehovah has spoken we will do. And Moses repeated the words of the people unto Jehovah. And Jehovah said unto Moses, lo, I come unto thee in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with thee, and may also believe thee forever. And Moses told the words of the people unto Jehovah. And Jehovah said unto Moses, go unto the people and sanctify them. And so as we read this, down in verse 16, we'll jump down. And it came to pass on the third day, when it was morning, that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mount. What they're seeing is the Shekinah glory of God. God chooses to manifest himself in that way to them. And we're going to find out here in Ezekiel, God chooses to manifest himself as a man within the Shekinah glory. God can do that. Okay, so we'll get to that when we get to that part of it. Thirdly, it was the noise of atonement, like the noise of a host, like the sound of an army yelling as they began to move into battle. Then it says, when they stopped flying, they would then let down their wings. Okay? Verse 25. And there was a voice above the firmament that was over their heads. When they stood, they let down their wings. So now he hears a voice that's up on top of this platform. He hears an audible voice. And we'll find out as we move through who that is. He hears a voice. What the voice says will be revealed in chapter 2, and we may get to that for the service this afternoon. So chapter 2 could be part of that. It just depends where I finish up with this today. The voice came out of the throne that was erected above the firmament. Okay, so Ezekiel sees something on a throne. Again, remember, it's the likeness of. So likeness means figurative speech, just like Kurt was telling us. It's figurative speech. He sees things, he can only describe what he's seeing. The sheet of ice looks like ice. A throne sitting up there, and he sees a man. Okay? He'll describe that to us as we move through this. The source, it's God himself. Okay? It's God himself. The glory of Jehovah. Ezekiel 1, 26 through 28b. So the glory of Jehovah. He says in verse 26, and above the firmament that was over their heads, that means the cherubim, was the likeness of a throne. Not the throne, the likeness of a throne. As the appearance of a sapphire stone, and upon the likeness of the throne was a likeness as the appearance of a man upon it above. Everyone gets nervous, right? Because you cannot see God. Ezekiel sees the likeness of God manifested here as a man sitting on a throne. Now, he doesn't see his face because he never says that. And he'll tell you what he sees within this. But it's what now, from what he's seeing now, what he's telling you is, it's the likeness of a man. Okay? The glory of Jehovah. Ezekiel tells you exactly what he has been looking at, the glory of Jehovah. He tells you who it is. Okay? God appeared to Moses in what? A burning bush. God can appear however he wants to appear. He appeared to the Israelites as a cloud with thunder and lightning. That was his Shekinah glory. That's what he chose how to do that. Okay? for some reason, with Ezekiel now, Ezekiel sees something that looks like a throne, and on the throne, something that looks like a man. Okay, the outward shape of a man. That's what he's describing to us. The likeness of the throne was above the firmament, so it was above the platform, the throne. Okay, the likeness of the throne. It had the appearance of a sapphire stone, or I think what the NASB says, the ancient lapis lazuli. Okay, it's a fancy gem. It's a sapphire stone. So whatever it is, it's beautiful. That's what he's describing to you. Okay, he doesn't say how big the stone is. It's just there. Okay, it's there. The color, deep bluish turquoise, often veined with gold. So that's the picture of what he's seeing. Okay. Then he says, or he tells us, he sees someone sitting on the throne who has, again, the appearance of a man. Okay? Has the appearance of a man. Any questions on that part of it? So above the firmament, above this ice, whatever this platform is, he sees a throne. On the throne, something either above it, side of it, is a sapphire stone. He's going to give us some more details here, a little more, what else he sees. And then he sees someone sitting on the throne who has the appearance of a man. Okay? What does he mean by the appearance of a man? As I said, God can take different things. Look at Psalms 18:10. It's where God is seen riding on a cherub. Psalms 18:10. If you read down through this, this is David talking, and eventually he says, and he, meaning Jehovah, rode upon a cherub and did fly. Yea, he soared above the wings of the wind. Now, I don't know what David saw. That's what he saw. God can do, we need to understand that, things that we don't understand. And for that reason, you know, he chose again to manifest himself in that way of riding on a cherub. Does he have to do that? No, but he chose to do that. Okay? The issue with this is, and the rabbis, of course, have major issues with this. God is seen in the form of man, and this too made the rabbis uncomfortable. They are uncomfortable with Ezekiel chapter 1, period. The ones in the past, and probably even the rabbis to this day, because you can't do that. You can't see that. And yet Ezekiel is telling us what he sees. Okay. He says in verse 27 through 28b, and I saw, as it were, glowing metal, as the appearance of fire within it round about. We've heard about that earlier in the chapter, so we'll cover that again. From the appearance of his loins and upward, so he's seeing a figure there, so from the appearance of his loins upward, and from the appearance of his loins downward, so down through his legs, up through this upper part, I saw, as it were, the appearance of fire, and there was brightness round about him, as the appearance of the bow, we're talking about the rainbow that is in the cloud in the day of rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Jehovah. And we get another picture of this rainbow in Revelation chapter 4 that John sees over the throne, where John is actually in heaven, actually sees the real throne, sees the one sitting on it, and above him is this rainbow. Okay? Pretty bright. Think about this now. So far, Ezekiel hasn't said what he's done anything yet. He's probably in shock. Okay? That's the only thing I can think of. Nothing's happened yet. He's just telling you what he's seeing. Okay? Okay, the description of the man is threefold. Okay, description of the man is threefold. Number one, in verse 27, this again is the kashma or the electrum. Remember we talked about that earlier in chapter 1. When the wheels came in the middle of the square, there was this burning fire, this electrum, okay, this kashma, which is a Hebrew word for electrum. So it's pretty bright. That's what he's giving you the picture of again. Again, he's retelling you what he already told you it was, so you don't get confused. All around this being, Ezekiel saw the appearance of fire. This is a symbol of the Shekinah glory. This is what he's seeing. Very, very bright. Okay? Very bright. Okay, his description, with what I just read, seems to indicate that the fire divided itself at the loins of this person seated upon the throne. One fire went downward, it said, and one fire went upward. Okay? But he can still make out the figure. If he can describe the loins of the person, he's seeing something there, the outline shape of it. Okay? In verse 28a, just as the rainbow is bright and multicolored, so was the appearance of the light here. Okay? Very, very bright. You know, it talks about when Christ returns, that Shekinah glory is going to be so bright, it's just going to, wherever the world is darkened, it's going to get bright real quick. Okay, that's the kind of the thing he's seeing here. So he's seeing this Shekinah glory. Remember now, in historic timeline, this is about 593 B.C. The Shekinah glory has not left the temple yet in Jerusalem because it hadn't been what yet? Nebuchadnezzar hadn't come conquered it for the last time. It's still there. He's telling you what he's seeing because eventually he's going to get transported from where he is to the temple and he's going to see it depart. Okay? The rainbow would refer back to the Noahic covenant. So the rainbow refers back. It's the same rainbow that John sees in chapter 4, Revelation, verse 3. And it's a reminder of God's commitment to his covenant with man. Interesting. So every time you see the rainbow in the sky, I don't believe it just happens to happen. It's God's covenant telling you he will never destroy the earth with what again? Water. That's the covenant he made with man. And if you go back in Genesis 9, 11 through 17 and read it, that's exactly what he tells Noah there. Okay? Any questions? I don't think I want to go. No, we'll go on. The identification is given in verse 28b. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Jehovah. So he's telling us who this is. It says in 28, as the appearance of the bowl that is in the cloud in the day of rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Jehovah. So how does he respond? Obviously, it's clear that he's seeing the Shekinah glory. Okay, we know that. He's seeing the Shekinah glory. From an exegetical point of view, God is appearing in visible form here. And he chooses to appear in the form of a man within the Shekinah glory itself. That's what Ezekiel sees. So God decides to appear that way to him. Yes? I think that's Jehovah. I think that's God himself. I think God the Father. Yep. Yep. And I would say, yeah, I would agree. The three, he's there. He's part, God is God, and Jesus makes up that unity. Hand? Yes. What's that?
What is that?
It's a canopy that the cherubim are holding up. It's a platform. Whatever Ezekiel says he sees a likeness of, it's of something he's describing with the four cherub holding up with their wings this platform, be it ice or whatever it is, yes. And then upon the firmament or just above it, he sees the likeness of a throne.
So it's not figurative language.
Well, yeah, it is, because he's just describing what it is. I don't know what, if it's I.
Houston looks like it.
Yeah, it looks like it.
The firmament of heaven is like the air spread out over the earth. So, and it's actually something. That's called a firmament too.
Yep.
I think
Something. And remember now, he's not telling you God dwells there. He's just there. What he sees is just something that, yeah. I don't think he's in the throne room like John is. I don't think that's where he's at in this vision. I don't think he's there. I don't think he's in the, it's like I said earlier, it's something that it's beyond our understanding of where this would be. I don't think he's in heaven that we think of heaven. Okay? And let me try to close this real quick here. The vision that he sees, or Ezekiel saw, will be repeated three times. Okay, three times. Chapter 3, 22 through 23, Ezekiel's called upon to give predictions concerning the siege of Jerusalem. Okay, if you want to mark that down, you can. If not, that's just a later study, so you don't have to put that down. But he sees this vision three times. The second one is in chapter 8, verse 4, where he will predict the departure of the Shekinah glory. Okay, that's what God is getting him ready to tell the exiles that are in Babylon. And then 3, chapter 43, 1 through 3, is where he predicts the return of the Shekinah glory in the millennial kingdom. Okay? And then we'll get into the call of Ezekiel, but Nancy hit it on the head. We'll start that for the worship service. Ezekiel's response is, and I'll close with this, he falls down on his knees when he sees this now. He falls down, which should be, I would think, any one of our responses too. Okay? So we'll continue this at 11:30 or whenever I get back up here again. All right? And I guess we'll be a little different for that. If you want to ask questions during that time, that's fine. It's not going to be a sermon per se. It's still a teaching session, and that's the way I decided to do it. So let's go to the Lord in prayer. Father, we just thank you for your word. We thank you for all these good questions and the answers that were given. We just pray for the service to follow. Give me the right words to use and to teach with. We also pray that you could be with us during this little short fellowship time that we have and be with us during the communion service. We ask all this in Christ's name. Amen.